Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
So this week, my friends, we are taking it to the pocket pets. That's right. We are going to be talking about our rabbit friends. And I can't think of a better person that's very competent in this area. But also, listeners, she's a lot of fun. If you don't know her, now you will. She's a great friend of mine. And it's Dr. Lila Proenza. How are you, my friend?
Hello. Hi. Thank you for having me here. This is fun. Listen, I'm going to start by killing you already. So usually you kill my name, you murder my name, but this time
I did it.
Pocket pets. I know you did great, but you said pocket pets.
Oh, well, should we redo it?
No, leave it there. I'm known by like being very, I don't know. We can use bad words here, right? I'm known by being like, very picky, let's put it this way, about the name.
So what should we call them? Just lagomorphs? Should we go with lagomorphs?
No. So if you're talking about exotic animals in general, then we say zoological companion animals. But if you're talking about, because you can't fit a rabbit in your pocket, what type of pocket do you have?
I'm 6'4". I think I could fit one, like a small little one, not a fly, but a small.
I'm messing with you. You know, I couldn't start this without like, rabbits or zoological companion animals. I know I complicate things.
No, I'm but a lot, I love that's Adam. That's how we learn. it's great. So a little bit about you too. So to our listeners, she is the founder and CEO of VetAhead, and so she's always been passionate about veterinary medicine. But get a load of this, everybody. She is the first South American to become a diplomat of the American College of Zoological Medicine.
It's a lot, Adam. I won't lie. You know, I usually don't care much about those things. You know, I'm one of the people that just check boxes and I don't celebrate and I don't, whatever, you know, did this check next. Not because I don't think they are valid, but but this one, it represents a lot because it is crazy if you think I'm like the only South America. What does it say about access to knowledge? Right. That's what the way to me, it's like saying I'm the only woman, which is not true, but I'm the only, it's not possible that I'm the only capable person in South America. That's impossible. Right. So that really talks about privilege and really talks about access to information, access to opportunities and how inequality, you know, and so that's why it has a huge weight for me because I want to give back. It was a huge struggle. I'm not saying it was easy. I recognize my privileges, but it was a struggle. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And I don't think it should be that hard. Like, and then that's why, again, going back to VetAhead, that's why I started it. Because like, it can be that hard to get knowledge. Like we were just talking about pocket pets, right? The name, like it shouldn't be that hard to get access to the correct name. Like,
right.
And So that's why it has a huge weight for me because it's the weight of like, you know, being from the third world. I know how difficult it was there. Like to have access to papers there is such a nightmare. Like it's really not accessible. It costs a lot.
Why do you think that is?
I think part of it is the third world, the systems and et cetera. The other part is like the dollar, right? Because the currency for us, each dollar costs us 5 of our money. So everything's times 5. But I think honestly, there's one journal that does a good job about it in my area. But I think because people don't leave those problems, they don't think about what it is to be in a third world country. So they don't make it accessible for us. Mm. There's one good ZooMed journal that grants access for free for third world countries. So if you're in India, Brazil, you cannot see the papers, but everything else costs a lot. So knowledge is still privilege. It's still privilege. If you listen to this and you have access to knowledge, you are privileged. And you might be not privileging other aspects of your life, but knowledge is something, and I tell my kids the whole time, it's something so powerful. It really empowers you. That's why we say VetAhead is We're empowering veterinarians through ZooMed because it is empowering. Nobody can take that from you, right? If you buy a stethoscope and I get it from you, gone. Right. But how I, like, if I teach you how to listen to a heart, that knowledge is always yours. So, yeah.
You know,
I think part is that.
It is. And you know what I love that you're doing too, to the listeners, you got to follow her on social media too. I love your education videos that you're doing on Vet Ahead. I mean, it's really, really powerful. It's one thing to just like say something. You're actually showing the viewers. Tell us a little bit about that impact that you're making.
Yeah, that was a, thank you for saying that, because we put a lot of work. Yeah. You know that because you work with social media. There is a whole team of people behind me. And we plan, it's all planned what we're going to talk, the topics and all. It's not at random. Because we definitely want to do a good job about teaching. So when we started, it was kind of a hard decision to see, like, to decide what the format we were going to offer, because I wanted it to be educational, but also be interesting. And I didn't want it to be another Instagram that just shares pictures of cute animals or pictures of cool cases, because yeah, that is interesting, but that doesn't teach anyone, right? If I teach there, like, laparoscopic ovarectomy in a rabbit. Oh, yeah, super interesting, but that's not going to impact anyone, like maybe one or two people. So the format, it was something that took us a little bit to find and tweak. But we want to make sure, yes, Vet Ahead, we charge for our courses. We are a profit company. But at the same time, we give back by, we give a lot of free content on Instagram. And I make a point, as you said, to teach it, like to really... nuggets of knowledge. Of course, you can't teach everything on Instagram. So if you want something more in depth, that's why we have the courses. And all you need is internet. And I get it, money, because you need to pay for the course. But we are partnering right now with three, and I'm so proud of that. We offer a scholarship every year for people from the third world countries, from BIPOC and LGBTQ plus. So we offer 6 spots every year. And last year, which was the first year, we offered 6. There was no way, Adam, to choose 6. We ended up choosing 12 because this is like, we started reading, Adam, you start reading the stories.
Can't even
you
imagine.
Go like, how is this person still like pursuing? Like, this is crazy. Like, people that are the first ones to go to high school, to go to college, like, the stories are just, you go like, okay, I live in a bubble. You know, I live in a bubble. So this year we're partnering with 3 big institutions in the United States that actually, I can't say the names yet because we have not yet closed the deals, but they are nonprofit organizations that look into inequality and look into underserved, you know, veterinarian or students or. So we are partnering with them because I was like, you know, we really need to expand that. That's a part I really want to give back.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. That's exciting too. And, you know, so you wear many hats, but I really want to talk a little bit about our rabbit friends for a little bit too.
Let's do it.
You're very vociferous about this. And I love it that you're passionate about, you know, GI syndrome in rabbits. And you know, and I by no means am I toted as like the one that knows all of these things, but I'm laughing even at like what we're talking about, like beyond the sub-Q flu is in cystic pride, because I laugh jokingly because I feel like that's almost, for me, that's the extent of what I know. But tell our listeners a little bit about some of the differential diagnostics when you think of GI syndrome in rabbits.
Yeah. So first I want to acknowledge the name, right? Because GI syndrome is not a name that everybody's familiar with. Because people refer as GI stasis as the syndrome, but GI stasis is just one part of the syndrome that may or may not happen, which is hypomotility, right? It's ileus, non-obstructive ileus. So things are not moving, but we don't have any dilatation. We don't have any gas. We don't have any obstruction. So pretty much that's one part of the GI syndrome. And we call it syndrome because it's multifactorial. It's not just about diet. It's not just about, you know, using of concurrent medications. It's not just about stress. It is way deeper than that. And so one of them is that what we call GI stasis, which is non-obstructive ileus. Then you can have obstructive ileus because things are not moving, rabbit's not eating, all that ingesta, all that hay becomes so dry because the animal's not, the patient's not eating. And then that dry ingesta ends up obstructing the GI. And I do want to touch on, because that's another controversial topic. We don't take these patients to surgery. Like, I don't think I ever took a rabbit to surgery except for one that had actually ingested a foreign body, like a piece of fabric. You can treat those, you can manage those clinically, but it requires way more than sub-Q fluids and sisapride. So the other thing that people don't think much on the GI syndrome is gastritis, so ulcers, GI ulcers. So that can happen too. And last, you can also have tympani, which is bloat, which is not obstructed. The patient's not obstructed, but it's just like a hoarse colicking because they cannot vomit, they cannot burp. And then if that other part of the GI becomes distended and full of gas and is very painful. And they can happen concurrently. Like you can have bloat and non-obstructed villus and so forth. So that's a GI syndrome. And the funny part about the sub-Q fluids or like, right, you see a rabbit with dyspnea and people immediately give sub-Q fluids and refloxacin, right? Yeah. And then I go like, guys, do you really think, like, I think it just takes a second to think, do you really think all the diseases that can happen in a rabbit will be treated with sub-Q fluids and Baytril?
Right.
And I was like, okay. And then if I switch, this is an exercise I propose to everybody. If I switch the name, okay, Adam, you're seeing a dog that presents with difficulty breathing, open mouth breathing. What is your top differential?
Right. Well, I won't be going for Baytril, that's for sure.
Like, so you will think about, okay, it's either respiratory or it's heart, right? Mm-hmm. And heart is a big one. So the same thing with rabbits. They have heart disease. Congestive heart failure is a big one. And then you give you fluids.
Right. Yeah. So that's
and Baytril.
Right.
It's like, yeah. So you're not doing any good. You're actually causing more harm. So I'll go like, people, it's just another patient. Like, it's impossible that everything is going to be cured. Like, if I told you, any dog with GI problems, you're going to treat with sub-Q fluids, this is a problem, you're going to laugh, right? You're going to be like, uh-huh, yeah, a green day comes bloated and I'm going to give sub-Q fluids and this is a problem.
Never.
You're going to be like, crazy?
But
it's the same with rabbits, you know?
Yeah, and so with the rabbits, the GI obstruction, I've heard, correct me if I'm wrong, is it true that you can use blood glucose to diagnose GI obstruction?
Oh, my friend, look at you. Have you been to one of my lectures?
San Diego lecture.
So you can't diagnose, but it's a great prognostic indicator. So because it can get tricky, just like in dogs and cats sometimes. Is it obstructed? Is it not obstructed, right? Sometimes you need to do x-rays. Should we talk a little bit about just diagnostics very quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So just like in dogs and cats, right? So the clinical signs are so broad. It's just like, oh, it's not eating, it's anorexic or hyporexic, not eating as much, is lethargic, and decreased fecal output or absence of fecal output. So that is so generic, right? And then, okay, so we need to diagnose. So the first thing that I recommend, which you already dabbled in, it's blood work. And so there's no skipping that. There's no cutting corners. And that's what I tell people. There's no cutting corners. There's no magical formula. There's no magical injection. You need to work up your case just like you would do when a dog or a cat. So first thing, blood work. And the minimum blood work I would say you have to have is blood glucose, because that's going to be a prognostic indicator. There's a beautiful paper that showed that blood glucose is hyperglycemia, that was above, and don't quote me on that, don't remember exactly the value, but like above 360 or 350, 360, carried a poor prognosis, and we usually related to obstructed bunnies. And then something around 160 or something was more related to GI stasis or non-obstructive ileus. So again, we can look at these numbers. I actually have a post about that on Instagram on our is the underlying vet head, but you can use it as a prognostic indicator because it also helps you right away to say, okay, this is not going to be simple, right? If it's super hyperglycemia, if it's like a severe hyperglycemia, it's not going to be simple. I can foresee I need to hospitalize this patient, place an IV catheter, you know, and it's going to be a little bit more invasive, and you can relate that to the owner. By the way, rabbits don't have diabetes. So it's not going to be a differential for that hyperglycemia. And then the next thing I would say is PCV total solids. That's going to help you with assessing dehydration, because again, you don't look at a rabbit and say, let's just give 10 mL of fluid. No, you calculate, you estimate dehydration, and you calculate maintenance and then losses, and you go just like a dog or cat. And then the other thing, Adam, super, super important, is actually looking at liver levels. And that's so important because guess what? A lot of rabbits have liver lobe torsion. It's actually quite common. And it presents like that. You would think that the rabbit will come dying, right? If I say the liver is twisted, you say, okay, it's going to come in shock. And sometimes they do, but majority of times just come like, oh, my rabbit woke up this morning, didn't want to eat, was a little lethargic, didn't come for a treat. And if you just brush it off, or if you treat as a GI stasis and you don't check the liver, then you're missing a big one. And okay, since you know about the glucose, let's see. What do you think is the prognosis for a rabbit with liver lobe torsion that is taken to surgery for liver lobectomy?
I would say it's pretty good. It has to be.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's excellent. Right? Yeah. So see, that's why the need of doing diagnostics. So once we do that and we rule out liver lobe torsion, because today we're talking about GI syndrome, the other thing that I would say is essential is BUN and creatinine, because really, these patients with GI syndrome, they usually very azotemic. Like scary sometimes. And the reason I want to point it out is you will see BUNs like, you know, 40, 50, and you go like, holy, can I swear?
Sure.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
What the F?
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, you look and say like, oh, this is renal disease, this is renal failure. No, you know, hold your horses. It might not be. It's just because it becomes severely dehydrated. So, of course, they can have renal disease, but I'm saying don't jump in there, then giving a horrible prognosis. I would say treat at least for 24 hours and reassess. Again, we need to monitor blood work. It's not just you do one time and that's it. You know, it's just like a dog. So you do that, okay? And then the next step, if you rule out liver lobe torsion, the next step will be, okay, let's take x-rays. There's no skipping that one. There's no skipping that one. And the other thing, not skipping it, it needs to be sedated. It needs to be sedated.
Yeah.
And if you do it properly, I guarantee you, like, it's so safe. It's so safe. And you go like, oh, but the patient is super dehydrated. It's super sick. Yeah, like, there are drugs that you can use that are safe. So you take x-rays. And with the x-rays, you're going to be able to differentiate between all those components of the syndrome we talked about, like bloat, non-obstructive villus, obstructive villus. That's why you use to gauge what you're dealing with and how you're going to treat. So that's kind of a overseeing of diagnostics.
And yeah, diagnostics. But it's interesting because in treatment, I know that that you are not a big fan for metoclopramide or cisopride. So and then I'm thinking to myself, because I know the answer because I sat in your lecture, but tell the listeners, because so what do you treat then? How do you treat it?
Yeah, and I know when I say that, I get a lot of people like, what? This chick is crazy. I usually start with, bear with me. You're going to think I'm crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not that I'm not a big fan. It's actually studies. We actually have data to back it up. I would love to be a big fan because it's an easy route. But the point of the matter is the studies we have so far, okay, in rabbits and a few in chinchillas, they show that metoclopramide and cisopride do not work in rabbits as a prokinetic at the doses and frequencies they have been used. Maybe it's because we're not using the appropriate dose. Maybe it's because we're not using the appropriate frequency. I don't know the answer right now. But at the dose and frequency we usually use, they do nothing. They do nothing. You're not helping. So the triage, is that how you say that? To treat triad, like the three pillars.
Oh yeah, pillar. Yeah, yes, yes.
Oh, but there is a triad.
The triad?
There's a fancy word for that. Well, anyway, let's not be fancy then. I think the three the three big things is fluid therapy. And when we talk fluid therapy, it's not sub Q. Okay. It's an IV catheter that you're gonna place. You go like, oh, is it possible to place an IV catheter in a rabbit? Yeah, in a awake rabbit, I kind of agree. But you remember you sedated that rabbit for x-rays, you already placed the IV catheter there. And then so fluid therapy, which is IV fluid therapy. So here's what happens. If you treat with IV fluids, calculating your fluids, giving it properly, just like a dog and cat, your patient's going to be hospitalized 1-2 days. Of course, it depends on the severity of the case. If you do subacute fluids, it's going to linger for a week. Okay. Mm. And it might not work depending on the how severe it is. So IV fluids, that's one of the three big ones. Second, pain management. Like, this is huge because remember, they can vomit, they can burp. So it's really painful. And if they are in pain, they're not going to eat. They're going to, you know, the whole thing is going to be a snowball. So pain management means, you know, either an opioid IV or subcute, buprenorphine oral. And it does not work well for rabbits. The dose that you need to give to the book of buprenorphine, the dose you need to give, it's so high to reach therapeutic levels that they become sedated. So it's counterproductive. So it needs to be injectable, right? Again, that's why you need to hospitalize your patient. A meloxicam is a plus or minus on that, or any NSAIDs, because remember, when they arrive, they usually dehydrated. So you're not going to do meloxicam until your patient is no longer azotemic. And then the third one is prokinetics. And that's the part is tricky. So the studies that we have so far show, okay, Lila, you told me metoclopramide doesn't work, cisapride doesn't work. What does work? So to this stage, we know that lidocaine CRI, so constant rate infusion of lidocaine, not only works as a great prokinetic, is also pain management, right? So that's a great one that I start right away. Again, your patient needs to be on IV fluids because you need IV access for that. The other thing interesting, there are two other drugs that have been studied and show really good promise. One is meropitant, okay, that shows some promise. It was a PK study, pharmacokinetic study, but as a side effect, they saw that increases fecal output. Again, I say shows promise because they didn't do a study specifically to assess that. But I usually would use that. And then the other drug that shows really good results so far is very promising, is mirtazapine oral. It shows that it does increase fecal output. It does not increase the appetite, but it does increase fecal output. So mirtazapine is oral at 3 mg/kg. They study once a day. And then meropitant is injectable. I know we do have oral, and sometimes I will compound because the tablet is usually too much for a rabbit, but is 1 mg/kg on the study they did. However, I usually use that in the hospital. The study was with injectable. So yeah, those are all resources, but honestly, that the end of the day is hospitalization and critical care and fluids and all that good stuff.
And how do you necessarily prevent GI stasis in rabbits?
That's a tricky one, Adam, because GI stasis will like be secondary to basically anything, or GI syndrome. But basically, like, as a big thing is providing a lot of fiber in the diet. So hay should be 80 to 90% of the diet of a rabbit. Pellets should be like very minimal. So usually what we say is, like, if you have a rabbit, the size of the body is what the rabbit should eat in hay every day. The size of a head is what they should eat in greens. And the size of the eye is what they should eat in pellets.
So I like that's that. A big Say one. That one more time. Yeah. That was really good.
Yeah. So that's not scientific. It's just like for the owner to have an idea.
Yeah. Works. Yeah.
So size of the body is what the rabbit should eat in hay every day. So it's going to be a big pile, right?
Yeah.
Then the size of the head is what they should eat in greens. And the size of the eye is what they should eat in pellets. So it's very minimal. And they can't even survive without pellets and thrive without pellets, okay? But we usually give it because if the hay was not sun-dried and it's not really rich in vitamin D, et cetera, you can compensate that with the pellets because they have vitamins and whatnot. The other thing is exercise. Exercise is like a horse, okay? If you close a horse in a stall and they don't walk, then they have colic. It's right. The same with rabbits are not meant to be in a cage. They need to be in a playpen. They need to be or outside, et cetera. Of course, protected from predators. But so that's a big one. And the third one, it's water. They need to have access to water. And by that, it's like, oh, yeah, obvious. But no, instead of giving water in a bottle, they should have water in a bowl, because there is a study actually showing that they drink more water from a bowl than from a bottle. So I think this will be a good, really good three prevention ones.
I can listen to you all day. Honestly, I really could. This is so helpful. So thank you so much for sharing this information. And our listeners, really quick too, I know that you're going to be at our upcoming Fetch conferences throughout the country too. So please check in with us on Fetch DVM 360, because she is a great speaker. You have got to see her in person, to the listeners too. So this is just a soft opening to all the great things that she does. And where can we find more information about you and VetAhead?
Yeah, so VetAhead. So all of this information we actually have in courses online. And the courses are super fun and interactive. They're really like storytelling. It's awesome. It's a very immersive experience. So if you go to vetahead.vet, V-E-T, so vetahead.vet, that's our website. You can find our courses. And all of these that I'm talking here is in our courses. And then you can find us on social medias at @_VetAhead. So we have Instagram, we have YouTube, we have Twitter, Facebook. And now we started on TikTok. Like, I'm super blogger right now. Those are all places you can find us.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.